Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM. Excuse me, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. It starts tomorrow. The Ryder Cup up in Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Michigan, Whistling Straits. One of the best golf events every 2 years by far. It's tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about it at the end of the show. Whistling Straits. Well, it makes the Euros feel a little bit more at home. Seeing videos, it's overcast, windy. You'd think they were playing St. Andrews or something with the way the weather is. Is this going to be the beginning of one of the all-time great runs for the Americans? I've got a theory here.
I'm interested.
I've got a theory here. Stricker.
My initial reaction is no, but
would Stricker ever consider the pairing everybody wants to see? Then also, we'll tell you who we think will win. College football this weekend. Man, we missed, and sorry, Bill. I didn't have my phone in here to start yesterday, and I normally do, and I see when messages pop up. I missed the messenger of the anniversary yesterday. 15-year anniversary of something that's in our intro, for goodness sakes. It was September 22nd, 2007. So I guess it'd be 14 years. 15, though, the way it goes. Anyway, whatever. I'm a man, I'm 40. Everybody remembers that. But what you don't remember was the fire that Mike Leach was spitting at the exact same time. So talk about that. Play both of those. I've got clips of both of those. Also, yesterday, college football playoff board met. Delayed the vote. Supposed to happen the 28th next week. Not going to happen. Why? What's next? NFL weekend. Best games coming up. And then also, there are seven defeated teams so far. 7-0-2s. Who has the best shot at making the playoffs? Do you know the seven you want to?
No, I have no. I would have to look that up.
Detroit, Jacksonville, Atlanta, the Jets, the Giants, Indy, and Minnesota. We'll recap those when we get there as well. So who has the best shot at making the playoffs of the teams that started 0-2? So that's what we got on the docket for today. What's up, Jared?
How are you?
I'm a little tired. A little tired. Went to the fair
last
night.
That's right. That was the fair. How was that?
Went to the fair. Searched and searched for winning ribbons for my man Wyatt Compton. Now, 2 years ago, he did have the state fair winning watermelon. Couldn't find anything this time.
Oh, darn.
Just didn't happen.
Well, I mean, it's still an honor to have your stuff represented at the state fair.
Yeah,
Oklahoma.
We couldn't find anything. It was a little weird. We were searching and searching for Beckham County students, and we didn't really find any.
Darn.
So I don't know if it was just a down year or something weird happened. Anyway, but outside of that, there was like a 10-second period of a little bit of sadness, a little bit of disbelief, because I don't think it ever occurred to him that he wasn't going to be a winner.
Right.
But then after that, he's like, all right, let's go get something to eat.
Yeah, yeah. What better way to drown your sorrows than food from the state fair?
We did three different things and kind of shared a little bit, although we didn't get to share much of his. But we went two completely traditional and one way off the map.
Yeah, you got to do something off the map fried,
there was
right?
A pretty off the map one. So, of course, a funnel cake that we shared. I got a giant corn dog.
There you go.
And he got pizza on a stick.
Pizza on a stick. Sounds like a good idea. How does that work?
Envision like a Hot Pocket.
Gotcha.
With a stick in it.
So is it as wide as a Hot Pocket?
It's way bigger. It's way bigger than a Hot Pocket.
Wow, okay.
Because the stick is about, I don't know, an inch wide.
Oh, it's like a pole.
It's like a, I mean, it's like a yard.
Like a rod.
It's like a ruler.
Okay.
Honestly, it was very similar to a ruler. And then, you put it on there, and it was pretty good. At that same spot, there was also pizzas that had scorpions, crickets, and mealworms on there. Did not see anybody partake in that.
I'm sure that line was short.
Didn't see that being partaken in, but I'll tell you the line that was long, and it is every single time you go there. It's because they smell so delicious. I've never even tasted one because I don't want to stand in that line.
Yeah.
The cinnamon roll line.
Oh, of course.
Dude, it was forever long.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Lemonade's delicious.
You got to get the
Always got to get lemonade.
Right.
But it was a pretty short trip. We looked, we came, we saw, we conquered, and then we left.
That's okay.
But we got home a little later than we normally used to going to bed.
The last time I was at the State Fair of Oklahoma.
When you marched in a band?
Huh?
When you marched in a band?
No. When OU went to Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah, 2006.
After that game, I met up with friends at the State Fair.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so, I've...
Weird. It's been that long since I've been to the State
Fair. Before we started going to check out vegetable growing... I think the last time I was at the State Fair, I was at a concert after the rodeo.
I've been to one of those.
With Sawyer Brown.
Lori Morgan.
The race was on.
Lori Morgan was...
Pride in the backstretch. Yeah. Heartache was coming to the inside.
Great stuff.
That's a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I never went in college that I can recall.
Yeah. I went to the city area to watch that game at a friend's house. He was having a watch party. And then afterwards... met some other friends at the State Fair.
I told my wife.
I was not in a good mood.
I told my wife when we were walking out of there that it would probably be a horrible idea for her to ever, ever let me go to the fair without her.
Because you would...
probably eat myself into... Yeah. I don't know. Because there was so much stuff that sounded cool, I just wanted to try it.
I'll be honest, nowadays I'm real scared to go to the fair if I'm there after dark.
Yeah, we left before dark.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a good place to be.
I saw a giant fight on Facebook.
Saw that too.
Did you see that? Yeah, we left before dark.
Yeah, that something about, it just brings out the crazies. Nothing good happens after
dark. There were lots of food that I wanted to try.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You know, we go to the State Fair Arena every March.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some good food in there. Is it the same? No.
No, you don't.
I wish there was. You know.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh!
You get the
yes.
State Fair atmosphere at the OU Texas, right? Wouldn't
That's
that be
what
cool
makes
to have that
game so awesome.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool to have that kind of atmosphere at the small school? State
I think it'd be great to have the cheese curd taco.
Yeah, have all that food option.
I can't believe I didn't try that. I still can't believe I didn't try that. But I was. We were also planning on eating after we got done, so I wasn't wanting to be. I didn't need to have two suppers, if you know what I mean. It was fun, though. I would definitely recommend, if you can, weeknight is so much better than weekend.
Oh, I bet the crowd was less.
Oh, it was way less.
Yeah.
It was so much more enjoyable.
Well, good.
All right, NFL weekend. Best games. I kind of circled three or four. Chargers at Chiefs. Miami at Vegas. I think the headliner by far this weekend is Bucks at Rams, and then I've also got Green Bay at San Francisco. It's a pretty interesting weekend because, you know, we were talking about after the loss on Monday night, or Sunday night, I guess, from Kansas City, and the way that the West looks, you know, we were ready for the NFC West to be really good.
Yeah.
I don't know how prepared we were for the AFC West to be really good, right?
Right.
And you look up in Vegas, and the Broncos have won both. Chiefs and Chargers were 1-1. And now you start getting the first division game. And this is what I was, and listen, no one really thinks this happens. But if the Chargers can go in there, and the Chargers have played them decently tough. You know, it took a Butker, 54-yarder to beat them on the road last year. And then, you know, the the schedule will show that the Chargers demolished the Chiefs. Now, what you don't realize is it was the last game of the season and the Chiefs were sitting guys. But, you know, it does seem like they've some of the, them and the Raiders specifically have really kind of played the Chiefs tough over the last couple of years.
Yeah, a lot
and,
of familiarity.
And that
I
makes
think.
Sense yeah. because they play every year and they're division opponents and all that. But, you know, all of a sudden, if the Chargers can go in there and pull off the upset at Arrowhead, you're looking at the Chiefs in the cellar of that division. And it's not, you know, some division, all, not all divisions are created equally. Like an 0-2 in the NFC East isn't nearly the problem as, say, an 0-2 in the NFC West, right? Because it's so much harder to climb back up in it.
Correct.
And so with a little bit better division, I wonder how much pause that gives the Chiefs fans if they are not able to knock off the Chargers on Sunday.
I don't know. It depends how it goes down. You know, you're not going to beat Kansas City with 14 points like the Chargers were able to muster against Dallas.
Right.
You know, and I guess the jury's still out on Dallas's defense to hold them to 14 points. You know, they had that red zone stop there in the third. I mean, but it depends how it goes down. Now if Herbert and company go into Kansas City, into Arrowhead, and they're scoring 21 plus in a win, yeah, I mean, I think the more shocking result of that is Kansas City giving up that many points and losing and not so much the Chargers winning.
No, Kansas City's going to give up points. I think we might as well just go ahead and say that. It's happening.
So it's the defense of old coming back.
It's just they're going to give up some points. I mean, they've given up, what, 29 to Cleveland, 36
yeah.
to the Ravens?
Yeah, that's
two good offenses, obviously.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's not easy. I don't care how bad you are or how good you are. It's not easy to score points in the NFL. It's just not. And when they've given up that many points, that is a cause of concern.
Yeah, I think
if
so,
I'm a Chiefs fan.
I think so. Now they'll probably blow their doors off and be 2-1, and
yeah,
they'll be just fine.
When that result wouldn't shock us either.
Yeah, but I know. But a 1-2, and especially if the other two, you know, Vegas has Miami. It's another one I circled, and for one reason and one reason only, to see if the Raiders are for real. And then also, news came out yesterday: Tua Tagovailoa out with fractured ribs. So now that gives Jacoby Brissett a chance to step in and be the starting quarterback. Is there a chance that Jacoby Brissett steps in, plays well, and this is the beginning of the end for Tua in Miami?
Probably. I think even before the rib injury, there was question marks of Tua. And I think the bigger question marks for Tua were not so much his ability to play, but staying healthy. That was going in when he got drafted, off that devastating injury that ended his college career. I think that's kind of rearing its ugly head again.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because none of them really correlate
with
the
really
other.
They don't relate, but, right. it, just
but it
could
keeps
be
happening.
Like, it keeps happening, and you're like, God, this guy just can't stay healthy. But, yeah, I can see that scenario.
Tampa and the Rams, this is, to me, for sure the headliner.
Well, that has to be game of the week.
Of the weekend. And kind of the afternoon window there on Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, Brady he's incredible. 9 touchdown passes in 2 weeks at 44 years old or 43, whatever. I mean, old man. I mean,
is he on pace for 44 touchdowns?
He doesn't even look like the best 44-year-old quarterback we've ever seen. Good God, man, he looks like the best quarterback in the league right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the weapons he has, you know, everybody wants to talk about Cleveland or whoever else with the weapons. The weapons that Brady has at his disposal are off the charts. He's got a fantastic offensive line. He's got a good enough running game. And he's got guys on the outside with Godwin and Mike Evans and Gronk just that are phenomenal. And so they've done a great job of surrounding him. Antonio Brown, which he's on the COVID list, it looks like, so he may not be there.
He's out.
You know, they've done such a great job of surrounding him with weapons. And also, it has to be noted, for all these younger quarterbacks that are signing these mega, mega deals, you know who never did? Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody in their right mind would pay him $40 million at 40 years old. But he didn't. That wasn't his style when he was 25 years old. You know what I'm saying? He always kind of took a little bit less so that guys could get paid and they could win championships. And voila, seems like it worked. And now he's on a Subway commercial selling his own cologne. I mean, a spoof of it anyway, you know. So, turns out you can make money.
I got a funny story about that.
You can make money elsewhere.
I got a funny kid story about that commercial. Because you know what that bread looks like when it's coming out of the cologne bottle? Apparently to my kid, it looks like poop.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Subway.
I started rolling.
Great idea. Children aren't, you know, aren't
my youngest,
it.
And she's just, you know, that when she's four and they're fascinated with that stuff, like, Daddy, what is that? So I think, before I could muster out what it was, it looks like poop. Yeah. Like, I don't think that's what it is.
That's certainly not
but now
what
every
it's
time
to
I
be.
See that commercial, I see that. Oh. But you know what? Tom Brady's so popular, he could sell that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Iced Eskimos got nothing on Tom Brady and that. I think this is an interesting game, though, because, you know, there's always the talk, there's already the talk of 16-0, which or 17-0, which would end up being, what, 20-0 for a title for the Bucs. But the one thing that has always been kind of his Achilles heel, and it's not just him, it's about every quarterback ever played, is pressure right in your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that pressure right in your face. And who better to supply pressure right in your face than one Aaron Donald?
Right.
So I think
that's going to be an interesting matchup.
I think this is going to be a great game.
Yeah.
A fun game. And maybe even a NFC title game preview type of game between the Bucs and the Rams. You know, Matt Stafford has looked fantastic so far, and that offense for the Rams has looked really, really good. They've got tons of weapons as well with, you know, Cooper Kupp, Higbee, the tight end, Robert Woods at the receiver spot. Van Jefferson made a long play in the first Monday night game as well. And so, yeah, this should be a great one. This should be a really, really good game between two what look like to be really, really good teams with Tampa and also the Rams. And then Green Bay and San Francisco is another one that I've got circled. It seems like Green Bay, of all the teams that they have no shot to beat, it's San Francisco. Feels like the Niners just pound them every time they play.
It's true.
And we'll see if Rodgers can.
Have you noticed this year, outside of maybe a couple, and I guess last Monday night's game is up for debate, but all the primetime games, Sunday night, Monday night games, Thursday night games, have been really good.
They've all gone over as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, all six of them so far.
Interesting.
You were talking about Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night.
Yeah.
Have all gone over.
They have been appointment watch TV for me.
Ever
since the Dallas-Tampa Bay game to start the season, every one of them been really good outside of maybe a couple. Now, last Monday, Detroit was up at half, but then Green Bay turned it on in the second half. But
yeah, it kept you interested just for a little bit at least.
Yeah, and it's just been interesting. It probably helps. The games themselves have been really good, have been really fun.
Even games. Washington and the Giants was a good game.
Exactly. I said this last Friday. I said, sure, we probably got a really good game because there are a couple of bad teams, but it was a fun game.
Tonight, Carolina and Houston. Listen, Houston's been better than anybody thought they were going to be.
There you go.
And Carolina, are they for real? Is Darnold kind of coming into his own a little bit, getting out of the Jets program? I know that defense leads the league 10 sacks through two games. Tyrod Taylor. He looked like he had them on the collision course to really, really challenge the Browns last Sunday. And then at halftime, he was out. Davis Mills will get his first start tonight for Houston, a rookie out of Stanford. But, yeah, I mean, this matchup before the season started looked like, oh, my God, not watching that. And now through 2 weeks, like, yeah, I'm going to check that out
a
little bit.
Storylines there.
Just to see. Yeah. Let's check that out a little bit.
And, of course, next Monday –
Philly and Dallas. Yeah, I figured we'd talk about that on Monday.
Dallas on a Monday night. Always.
All right, there's
light
seven.
Up the grill. Let's have fun. I can't wait for that.
Real quick, there's 7-0-2 teams.
Yes.
Detroit, Jacksonville, Atlanta, the Jets, Giants, Indianapolis, and Minnesota. Of those, who has the best shot at making the playoffs?
I'd say my initial reaction would be Indy. That's what I'd say. I don't not the Giants because of you're not going to get a wild card out of the East.
No, but I would hear
they're not winning the East, so that's why I ruled them out. I mean, Minnesota maybe, but
Minnesota,
my first answer would be Indianapolis.
Minnesota is this close to being 2-0.
Right.
Dalvin Cook fumbled as they were getting into field goal position against the Bengals. And then last week, the 37-yarder missed to beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think, to me, Minnesota and Indy are the only two that actually you could see bouncing back and being in being like in a race for a wild card. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because those two teams clearly look to be the best. Because
I can see Indy beating, obviously, Houston and Tennessee. And obviously,
right, and then
Jacksonville.
Right,
but
right.
That's why I can see them actually still climbing back and winning the South.
I would give the Giants not near as good a chance as those two, but at least a little bit of a chance just because they're playing in the East.
Because the rest of the teams could
just
be bad.
Just because they're in the NFC East.
Yeah.
Now, Detroit, Jacksonville, Atlanta, Jets, no chance. No chance.
No. No, I don't even give them – no.
No,
no chance for Detroit.
No chance for any of those
no
other
No chance
four.
For Atlanta. Again, the division's too hard.
Yeah, that's a good point here from Drew. Indy doesn't have a quarterback. And,
well,
you know, Wentz
know.
Is hurt again.
Yeah. But sometimes I look past that. I look at well-ran franchises.
Sure.
Indy's always had that reputation. So has Minnesota. It's kind of like the Steelers. You know, you never really can count them out because they've always been so well-ran. Who cares who's taking the snaps? They're still winning or still competing. You know,
yeah,
some franchises are just so poorly ran. You know, it used to be Cleveland forever, and Jacksonville right now just seems like they're just making poor decision after poor decision.
Now, having said that, Indy is going to have to go into Tennessee and win this week.
Doable.
Going to have to get
very
that
done. Doable.
I don't know. My main man, Derrick Henry.
What's that smell?
Upset? You think there's an upset?
No, I smell a burrito bet coming.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Oh, I'll take Tennessee heads up against the Colts for a
burrito. It's only Thursday. Let's wait till tomorrow. Let me sleep on it.
Let's not forget about that. Feels like a perfect Monday morning. Come in here and scarf down a burrito.
We got basketball schedules already thrown at us.
Of course. Yeah. See,
that's
in my mind. I was thinking that one and not the other.
Yeah. Okay. I already got basketball schedule. We were talking yesterday. Oddly, we are close to basketball, and I already got a schedule thrown at me. I love it. I love this so I can work ahead. Get ready for it.
All right, so.
Planning for it.
We failed to mention the anniversary yesterday. September 22nd, 2007.
Do you think they wear a bunch of I'm a man t-shirts in Stillwater on this day? Or do the kids who go to school there even know what that's about?
I don't know if they even know what it is. But 49-45, Oklahoma State.
In a wild game.
Wild. It was. I was there. I was actually on campus.
Really?
Yes. Wasn't in the stadium. I'm not going to 100% tell you. I can remember what happened. But I was on campus that day. We watched it across from Joe's on a big, gigantic TV monitor. And I just had a great time. Everybody remembers this part of that game, or this part of the post game anyway.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage, attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken, and then say that the coaches said he was scared. That ain't true. And then to say that we made that decision because Donovan Woods, because he threatened to transfer, that's not true. So get your facts straight. And that's all I got to say. It makes me want to puke.
Just phenomenal. At the time, it was phenomenal. It stands the test of time to continue to be phenomenal. You know, and that was at a point where Oklahoma State was getting better, but maybe didn't have the exposure. And I am a firm believer that video right there, that post-game rant, helped Oklahoma State in recruiting.
Oh, yeah, because he's standing up for a player.
For two reasons. Yeah. One, he was standing up for a player, and parents like that. And two, it got them noticed by kids that wouldn't have noticed them.
Right.
Because, like you said off air, no one, without looking, remembers the score of that game.
No.
But some, maybe even who won. But everybody remembers that because it was not only the lead of SportsCenter, it was the lead of, like, national news type thing. I mean, that's how big a deal it was at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that it really did. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he was sly as a fox in that way. I think he was just mad about that article and wanted to stick up for his guy. And then in the aftermath, it was really it turned out to be a really good thing, football-wise, for OSU.
Has it, outside of the state of Oklahoma, when you say Mike Gundy, everyone goes to that. Has it outshined, again, outside of the state, has it outshined what he's accomplished as a coach?
Maybe now. I think if you'd have asked that question 5 years after he did it, when Oklahoma State was in the running, I mean, make the huge argument that they should have played LSU in the national title game in 2011.
Right.
I don't think then. I do think maybe a little bit of his quirkiness. I mean, you think about the mullet, you think about the rattlesnake hunting, and all that different kind of thing that he's been, his name has been attached to. I do think that that's probably a little bit true in some instances, but I also don't think anybody would care if he wasn't successful, right? And so his success on the field allows people outside of Oklahoma or outside of the Big 12 region to recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, he would just be some guy that was yelling back in 2007 and it wouldn't matter who he is today.
Right.
Now, everybody remembers that. At the exact same time, in a different part of the underbelly of Lewis Field, this was happening, and this gets overshadowed because, hang on, let me restart. Because of the notoriety that Gundy got for his rant, this happened at the exact same time on the other side from one Mike Leach.
They outplayed us. They won the game. They deserve to win, okay? Now, I'm not focused on any of that stuff because it's not going to help me get better. So if they go win all the rest of them, that's great. If they lose all the rest of them, that's great. But they damn sure deserve to win this one. We had an offense that was extremely powerful, extremely productive, that probably sits and reads their press clippings. And, you know, in an arrogant fashion, sat around the sideline with their arms folded for most of the second half. The entire first half, we got hit in the mouth and acted like somebody took our lunch money, and all we wanted to do was have pouty expressions on our face until somebody daubed our little tears off and made us feel better. And then, you know, then we'd go out there and try harder once our mommies told us we were okay.
Once our mommies told us we were okay, what I found clipped off right there. But
I was holding my breath. I don't remember that, and I don't know if he was throwing out a few expletives.
There was one where he did that was
I was holding
cut
my
off.
Breath.
No.
You made sure
I didn't go just dry. I played that was on the report last night.
Okay,
that audio there. Yeah, I had definitely done my due diligence not for that to go F-bomb. But
what is in the water in Stillwater on that day?
Points and upset coaches, because that very day or the next day is when Leach fired his defensive coordinator and named one, Ruffin McNeil, actually, to that position.
Interesting.
You know, and then that starts the Ruffin McNeil kind of rise through different places and eventually, you know, retiring at OU.
Right.
What do you think, let's say, you know, the number is 85, scholarship limit. Outside of Nick Saban, all those years later, how many kids hit the transfer portal 35 seconds after they hear that from their head coach?
Oh, boy. A lot that don't get playing time. So Yeah, I would say around 5 to 10, which is a lot, I think.
Well, yeah, it's like an eighth of the team.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. The kids, like I said, who, how many kids show up on campus thinking, I'm going to get to play immediately, and then they don't, and then that happens, and they hear their coach talking like that, and he's absolutely right, by the way.
It's pretty ironic.
He's absolutely right. Now he can't say that. He can't talk like that.
He still does, and maybe that gets him in trouble.
Sure.
But it's pretty ironic that kind of the reason that Gundy was ranting was because a reporter wrote a story basically saying that Bobby Reed was what Leach was talking about his players being.
Yeah.
Isn't that – it's ironic that those two things go together that way.
Yeah. That is funny.
All right, College Football Playoff Committee met.
And by the way, on the topic of transfer portal and coaches have to be careful what they say, I mean, it's clear that's what Lincoln Riley's doing.
Oh, yeah. To the point where it's exhausting.
Sure, and it's exhausting for him, too, you think. Exhausting. He wants to go out there and tell the truth, so then, but he's so scared to say, a lot of coaches are like this, they're so scared to make a player mad.
Everybody but one. But the one wins.
Yeah.
So how come there's going to be a 30 for 30 about this one day, and it's going to be called whatever, Saban Magic Potion. I mean, he is just hammering that Billingsley, the tight end that was supposed to be a stud.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. He wins. But that doesn't necessarily.
Maybe he wants him to enter the transfer portal.
Yeah, maybe so.
He's like, yeah, I'm tired of you being dead weight. I want you out of here. And so he's going in on a podium with the Coke on the side, and he's saying all this stuff about him, hammering him.
I mean,
point, he's just trying to break him down and say, go, just go.
Maybe he has some. How about that? It's impossible to say this because he gets anybody he wants there, recruiting wise.
Yeah, he can just plug and play.
So it's not like he's like going into the background of a bunch of these kids, but maybe there is something to that where, you know, maybe not the five stars, but the guys just underneath that, it's more of a character thing. Sure, they're talented, don't get me wrong. But he's recruiting guys that he knows can stand up to what's going to happen on campus as opposed to just tuck tail and run.
Yeah.
But, man, he can sure – it's like two totally different universes. It's everybody else and coaches walking on eggshells to not – have their team go in the portal versus Saban. Saban can do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
it's really amazing that he's able to do that. And I get it. Winning does that. But listen, he hasn't changed.
No, yeah.
He hasn't changed. Same Nick Saban as what walked onto that campus in 2007. By the way, from yesterday's conversation at the end about Saban and Tebow and what changes for Alabama – I think if you weren't right and he'd have still gone to Alabama, the one place that we did find that was perfect timing lined up was Miami.
Yeah.
So he could have stayed in Miami, just went from coaching the Dolphins to the Canes, and then
who knows
what the U is.
Yeah, who knows?
The U is back. God, can you imagine how exhausting that would be if Saban was winning at the U? Oh, give me a break. So the College Football Playoff Board met, supposed to vote the 28th next week. That vote is going to be delayed. And the why is just issues that have not been ironed out, from the Rose Bowl to some different things. That's what's being said publicly, but let's be honest. It's the disdain for what happened after they had announced basically that this thing was going to happen. It's just a matter of voting to get it ratified. After that happened, then the OU Texas news to the SEC, and then also the ESPN kind of playing puppet master behind the scenes, because this year is the eighth year of a 12-year contract with ESPN to have the playoff. In order for this thing to expand before the end of that contract, basically that guarantees the rights to ESPN.
Right.
They have to agree to this. But then it's not bid out, right?
Right.
So how much do you think the disdain for OU and Texas and the SEC is there? I mean, we know it's there, but is that more than maybe the PAC, the Big, some other conferences trying to get multiple TV partners into this deal so that ESPN doesn't have the monopoly on college football?
I think that's a big part of it.
I think it's much bigger than the disdain for the team for the conference.
I do too. I don't think it's a personal thing. I think it's a money thing, and everybody wants a piece of the pie.
And you could, and it could be argued that if you could
an equal piece of the pie.
Well, but if you could open it up to outside bidding, then the number goes up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think OU Texas going to the SEC matters. I don't think the fact that expanded could mean about eight teams from the SEC in theory could make the playoff. I don't think it has anything to do with it, because I think most rational people are thinking, listen, if the best 16 teams are in it, then that's a true playoff. But I think it's a money thing. I think it's a network thing, and they want more time to iron that out to try to find a way to make the most money. And it's not so monopolized.
Yeah, and I do think there's some hurt feelings.
Do you?
Oh yeah, I think people are upset with OU Texas, the SEC, all as a conglomerate there. And I know people are upset with ESPN for what looks like trying to kind of create what they want to see.
Yeah, I can see that too.
And so therefore, I think it's more. I do think it's there for the conference and the schools with OU, Texas, SEC. But I think it's a lot more about ESPN and trying to keep them from being the monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can see the power of what they have. You know, if you're the other conferences, but if you're the other conferences, from a competitive standpoint, you have to expand this playoff.
Absolutely.
You have to. Otherwise, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Exactly.
And it makes no sense for the Pac-12 to go against an expansion of the playoff when that's about the only way they're going to get in the damn thing.
Exactly.
You know, the little guys are obviously going to vote for this, for it to be 12. But they don't – how big a seat at the table do they have? Not much. But when they get their choice – obviously, they're voting for an expansion because then they have a chance to get in the playoff. So I think a lot of this is just posturing. It's going to be all moot point. The thing is going to expand. Now, yesterday, maybe it's 8 instead of 12, which I know a lot of people preferred that anyway from the 12. But once again, the fewer teams you have, the chances shrink for the little guy, for the pack, unless they can get a guarantee, which at that point then – why would the SEC or the Big Ten agree to that? Because they are the two power players in this mm-hmm. that have the most to gain by expanding the amount of at-large teams or the most to lose by knocking that number back down.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, I don't think there's any doubt it's happening. It's just a matter of what it looks like and who, more importantly, I think, who is going to show these games once it comes to fruition either next year or the year after.
Right, right.
Still, it's just a topic that will not go away, and we'll talk about it again probably next week, and then I think the meeting after that is scheduled for January. But it's just going to be there until it gets decided, because once that gets decided, then the conference realignment stuff kind of kicks in, and it all gets done as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inevitable. It's going to expand. It's just a matter of when.
When and by how many. Yeah. Little Ryder Cup. Starts tomorrow. You know, all those guys that have ever been in that cauldron of pressure will tell you that first tee shot on a Friday morning, no matter the location, the U.S., anywhere in Europe, is like the most pressure-packed shot they will ever hit in their lives. Majors, all of it. This is the one that actually kind of gets them a little bit. And there's a whole bunch of guys that it's hard to kind of get to them.
Yeah.
And it appears this is kind of it. So it's going to be at Whistling Straits. We've seen Whistling Straits over the years. Think back to, 2010 PGA? It's when the Dustin Johnson controversy with the waste bunker ground in his club and all that happened. Jason Day ran away from everybody just 2016 or 17, just a couple years ago, when he won the PGA there. at Whistling Straits. It's a cool golf course. You know, it's one of those that visually, it's really awesome. From, you know, you see the fairway, but then you see just trash all around, big, tall. And it looks a little bit like a
Lynx
British type. Open style yeah. golf course.
Yeah, yeah.
And so far, from the videos I've seen and the talk around what's going on up there, maybe a little bit warmer than what they're used to over for an Open Championship, but the winds are howling off of Lake Michigan up there. And so, you know, we talked when the pairings were made, or the picks were made, the captain's picks. I thought Steve Stricker did a great job of fitting guys to the golf course.
Yeah.
Now the
that
question,
was a big reason why he picked, yeah.
That's right, big reason why he picked the guys he picked. Now the question is, did the PGA of America do a good job fitting the golf course to the Americans? Or is this more of a European-style golf course?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it will play a factor. I absolutely do. When you have that Lynx-style feel, overcast, like, but not as cold, but they know how to play this wind like the best in the world. So I'm sure that will be a factor into this.
The Americans have struggled in the Ryder Cup over the year, especially the past, gosh, since the 99 comeback at Brookline. And even before that, though, I think in 95 at Oak Hill was the first time the U.S. had lost on their home soil. And then it took that ridiculous comeback not to lose what would end up being, gosh, what, let's see, 95, 97, 99. Went to 02 because of 9/11, 04. So five in a row would have been lost without the 99 win there at Brookline. And it's been a wild ride even after that for the Americans. But I would submit to you that the worm is about to turn.
Really?
And the U.S. is going to be positioned after this week to go on a run like the Europeans did starting 20 years ago. And here's why. When you look at the ages of the players, everyone's scared to death of a few European guys. Sergio Garcia has won more points in the Ryder Cup than the entire American team combined. Actually, I think it's a tie. I mean, Sergio Garcia has been one of the greatest Ryder Cuppers ever. He's 41.
Yeah.
Everybody's scared to death of Ian Poulter. He's 45. Lee Westwood has been a guy. Gosh dang, how many times did Lee Westwood and Colin Montgomery rip your heart out in the Ryder Cup if you're an American? He's 48. And then the guys behind him, sure, you've got Rahm and you've got Rory, 26 and 32. But Fleetwood isn't necessarily a proven Ryder Cupper at the age of 30. Shane Lowry's definitely not at 34. Wiesberger's first Ryder Cup at the age of 35. Matthew Fitzpatrick hasn't been a sterling Ryder Cupper yet. He's only 27. But, you know, what I'm saying is the guys are supposed to kind of step in and fill the void of the Westwoods and Sergio and Poulter when they leave. They're either too young and haven't done it, or they're almost as old as they are. And then you go over to the U.S. team. JT, 28. Cantley, 29. Spieth, 28. X, 27. Finau, 32. Bryson, 28. Berger, 29. Morikawa, 24. Scheffler, 25. The best guys for the U.S. are just now coming into their own. And, oh, by the way, the elder statesman on this team, Dustin Johnson at 37. He doesn't show any signs of slowing down.
Not Koepka's at all.
31. And so what I'm saying is I think – with the best guys in the perfect age slot for the U.S. team, and some of these guys, sure, Rahm's 26. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with, but who else? Now, you're talking about Rahm and Sergio. We'll see about Hovland. If Victor Hovland can kind of step up this week, maybe he knocks this theory a little bit out of the water because he's only 24. If Fitzpatrick can figure it out or Tyrrell Hatton can figure it out, those guys are still in their 20s. So maybe that helps, but it looks like as just those guys from Europe get older and are about to exit stage left, the U.S. is the ones that are filling in with the young guns ready to go, as opposed to the Europeans just keep on recycling
them
through.
It's an interesting theory. Absolutely. I can see where that could play out. I could, but we don't. But the other side of it is we don't know. We know how great some of these guys are. You mentioned DJ. But some, you know, they look good now, but will they – you know,
oh, yeah.
two, three, four, 5 years down the road.
Yeah, like, Patrick Reed, when healthy. What's he, early 30s?
Right,
you know,
right.
That's another one,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Okay. The question on everybody's mind. Will Stricker have the cojones to pair Bryson and Brooks?
Yeah, I think he will.
You think it's going to happen?
No, I don't think it'll happen, but, well, that's a different question. Does he have the guts to do it? If the situation calls for it.
Okay, what is that situation?
I'm asking you that. What is that situation?
See, I've been thinking about this in my head. I think there's two. I think there's two situations where it makes sense. I think it has to be a four-ball match, which is, you know, best ball, not alternate shot. Let me find the schedule. So it has to be a four-ball, and I think one of two things has to be happening. I think it has to be either the U.S. on the verge of blowing them out or the U.S. on the verge of getting blown out.
So a
– either a,
doing it because
– to drive the nail
drive
in
the
coffin.
Nail, or because we got to get back into this.
And those two guys kind of feed off of momentum, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they kind of get fed that way.
And have they both said – publicly, we'd be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's admirable. I like that. Yeah. But would it happen? I think, does he have the guts? Absolutely. Now, would it happen? It's based on situations, like we said.
I think it is, too.
You're not going to do it just to pander. You're not going to do it just to, well, because the TV guys are pressuring him to do it or the public is. He's not going to do it like that. No, he's here to win.
All right, if this order is right, it looks like it's going to go foursomes in the morning, four ball in the afternoon. So what I'm saying is, if it would happen, it would happen Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
When the score, let's see, it'd be 4-8-12. So 12 points would be out there. Let's say the U.S. is, you know, trailing, say, 8-4. Nah, that's way too far behind. I mean, that probably would happen then, trying to win them all. But let's say it's like, I mean, even, you know, 7.5 to 4.5, 7 to 5, that's still a huge margin. Two points is a huge margin.
Yes.
You know, and try to get it. Or if the U.S. would happen to be up by that same and just really drive the dagger before the singles on Sunday.
Right.
I would love to see it. I mean,
love to see it.
Just to see how they would act around each other. I know they made a big deal about them saying hi to each other on the range the other day. I mean, that's where it's at. And what if all of this, throughout all these months, was just a ploy to get people to watch the Ryder Cup, and they've actually been buddies this entire time?
Aaron, I said that the day one, not about the Ryder Cup, just to get interest back. Because what did I say right before that thing came out? Golf needs a good rivalry.
Yeah.
You see it in NASCAR. You see it, obviously, in every other sport. But you don't, you know, golf hasn't had a good rivalry in so long. And then literally days after I said that, this happened. It's like they listened or something. And then lo and behold, this is what we got all summer long. And then a part of me thought, was this a marketing scheme? Was this like WWE?
That's what it feels
you
like.
You know
right?
what I mean?
And then
just
all
to
of
get
a sudden,
people to watch it, what's going to happen this week?
Yeah.
Oh,
and then you're going to hear this. Oh my God, that's Bryson and Brooks' music.
You hear the smashing glass.
I mean, listen, if JR is up at Whistling Straits instead of in Norman, I'm going to know something's up. I'm going to know something's up.
Now I would watch every minute of that broadcast of JR is in the booth.
See JR,
cowboy hat.
All right, who wins?
Americans, barely.
I think Americans are going to win as well. They're a pretty heavy favorite, betting-wise. I think they've got enough. I think they're just better. They're the better team.
Yeah.
But watch out for Rory to resurface and just kill everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great Thursday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!